That's an important discussion, is when you see somebody being fearful or protective or territorial, you know, being able to approach that and kind of guide them through that is critical. Otherwise, other people start picking up on it and everyone starts acting the exact same way.
How do companies create a culture and core values that employees actually live out? The team at The Receptionist, a Denver-based software company, sets out to answer that very question. Welcome to The Fabric. Here's your host, Michael Ashford.
In this episode, we're back with another discussion with one of our amazing customers, David Fozzi. Now, David details his career journey from the world of corporate high tech to his current pursuits in the world of home construction and remodeling. David and I discuss the intention he brought to crafting the culture at his company, Edge Construction, in an industry with a reputation for being a bit more gruff and rough. He shares the lessons he learned in the corporate world about how to lead and guide teams that have served him well in growing his business into one where the culture is valued and where customers get an elevated experience because of it. If you're interested in learning more about what we do and how company culture drives us here at The Receptionist, consider subscribing to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TheReceptionistApp. We're releasing new episodes of The Fabric once a month, along with lots of other great content. And now, here's my interview with our customer, David Fozzi. David, welcome to The Fabric. So great to have you on, sir. I would love to start here with our conversation. You went from the corporate world to construction. Walk me through that. How did you come to that path for your career?
Yeah, very interesting. I grew up in construction with my father, you know, working summers and kind of getting, farmed out to the carpenter or the plumber. So that was my summer jobs. When I graduated high school, I went in the Marine Corps, said I'd never go back to school again. As soon as I got in the Marine Corps, I said I should probably go back to school again. So I ended up going to getting a mechanical engineering degree, stayed in construction with a lot of my own projects, throughout my corporate career, doing subsea fiber optics, high power and such. Everything I did was offshore. And then ended up moving to Michigan, and the market was so ripe, I started doing a lot of my own projects, residential projects, and pretty quickly everyone started asking me to, you know, jump in on their projects and do them. So I made that logical transition back into construction and cabinetry. So
that is as succinct as you can get it in a lifetime of experience in there, David. Offshore stuff, deep sea stuff. Is that what I heard in there?
Yeah, I was about the 50th employee at a company that revolutionized the oil and gas industry and telecoms industry. Back in the day, you would have big ships and they would hook everything up on the surface and send it all over. And if something broke, you had to bring all these packages back up, these sizable packages. The founder of my company developed a hybrid of a fiber optic and electrical and or fiber optic and electrical that can be plugged in and unplugged at the bottom of the ocean with a remote operated vehicle. So everyone knows how hard it is to bring two pieces of fiber together, but we did it at the bottom of the ocean. I got to do every aspect of the company. I was in charge of meeting with the customers, coming up with solutions for the customer, designing new products for the customer, testing those, go back and help the machinists and let the machinists yell at me when I drew something that was never able to make and unrealistic. And then I had the unique advantage at the company to actually follow those products into the field in a lot of scenarios and see how they were actually deployed and see how my product worked. So I got to cover everything from a business because it was such a small business. And at the time when I left, probably about 10 years ago, I was actually the only engineer that had been offshore in the entire company. I've probably been offshore 50 times or something. So,
and you're talking literally out on a boat offshore, right?
Yeah. On a boat, on rigs, gotcha. On, helicoptering out to platforms. It looks like the beginning of Armageddon. That's very realistic. And then we would, as we evolved, throughout my progress at the company, we could then put cameras, subsea, into the pressure vessels so we could see what was happening. One of my last career, before I moved careers, we had a buoy off the shore of Cyprus, and we had a camera on the bottom of the seafloor, and I could log in right here and turn that camera and turn lights on and off wherever I wanted on the bottom of the ocean.
Oh my goodness.
So we did an awful lot of, you know, science sensors. We could pick up any earthquake anywhere in the world from the subsea sensors. So very technical background.
Yeah, no doubt. Craziest thing that you saw in an undersea camera. I got to know.
A shark swimming through one of our big assemblies. It kind of got stuck, and then, you know, we're sitting there with the ROV that, you know, you float on top of the ship, and the ROV is at the bottom of the ocean. It's tethered by a fiber optic cable, and it's got a camera, so you can see it real time. The shark is just trying to get out, and it can't get out. It got stuck. It probably took him 2 or 3 minutes to actually get out, and so. Pretty exciting.
But he did get out, so that's the good news.
It did, yeah. It was safe and swam away.
Very good. What was that transition like coming out of what you just described? You're looking at sharks on deep sea cameras. You're working on things that are sitting on literally on the bottom of the ocean floor. You're helicoptering out to these platforms. You're creating these things, like you said, front to back in terms of the entire development of it. What was that like going from that to starting your own construction, where it's very much, I'll use a stereotype here, and I mean no offense by this, but it's much more, I would say, manual. And what was that like?
It was very ambitious to start off with. You know, coming from big corporate worlds, they have a big corporate machine behind them and very well, you know, established processes or enough people to do it. To do all the tasks that need to be done. So starting my construction company, like all startups, you know, you're doing everything. So I was very fortunate from my corporate career that I was familiar with doing everything and being able to manage my time.
Yeah.
And also then develop teams underneath that. You know, as it went forward, you know, and still it's still a smaller companies, but it's a good transition. It has a lot of similar, you know, call it hard times, as corporations do. There's never enough resources. Where do you allocate those resources? You know, how do you develop a team and run a team, develop subcontractors that don't report directly to you? So there's you know, a lot of challenges, but I feel like I was well equipped and differently equipped than most people who have not come from a corporate background.
Go there. What are those things that you learned in your corporate background that you said, hey, as I'm starting this business, these are the things I'm porting over. These are the things that I want to make sure I don't lose sight of. What were those things, David?
That's a really good question. Probably some of the primary ones are, you know, I'm really big on professionalism and respect, and no matter what aspect of my life it is. Maybe I got that from the Marine Corps growing up in the South, or, you know, who knows. But, you know, the respect factor is big. It's very stereotypical that most construction workers are, you know, yelling and screaming and dirty language and jokes everywhere. You know, the cooler talk is a bit more coarse than, say, a corporate world. Mm. That was a bit of a challenge converting that in, but it was something that was very important to me in starting both companies, is that no matter who worked for me, when they show up on the job site or interfacing with other contractors or customers, that it's 100% respect and professionalism. There's no, you know, foul language on my projects. There's no yelling. No one ever yells or screams unless there's a fire, and then everyone yells and screams to get out of the building.
Hopefully that's not happening too much.
Nope. Yeah, all joking aside, it's really just trying to bring that professionalism and respect into our company. That certainly gives us a competitive edge. No pun intended with the name of the company, but it certainly is a competitive edge in the environment. I go on, you know, customer interviews where we're, you know, they want someone and I'm looking to work with them, and the positive feedback that comes back from the way that I and my team conduct ourselves, definitely sets us apart.
I want to go deeper into why that was so important. You mentioned your obviously military background and growing up in the South, and those things have an influence. I'm curious why in going from the corporate world to the construction and contracting world, did you not just take that as an opportunity to let your hair down? Figuratively speaking, you and I have the same hairstyle, which is none.
Well played.
why not use that as a chance to just like, hey, I'm just gonna let loose here.
Yeah, I think, you know, I have very high standards for myself. So that certainly was one thing that was not going to be compromised. You know, I've been in some corporate situations where, you know, maybe maybe my management didn't make the best, you know, ethical decisions, and I voiced my opinions, but it was overruled. I didn't want any of that to transition into a company that I own. You know, I've also had bosses that did yell and scream at me and, you know, tried that on. And again, I didn't want anyone that works for me to ever feel like that. I want them to, you know, come to work knowing it's a respectful, professional place. And if we have disagreements, we know how to get through it. I also pride myself on being a really, you know, hopefully a really good leader. You know, for my corporate world, I spent a majority of my time trying to develop, you know, large teams. And I don't, you know, it's kind of easy just to say, you know, I can be a good leader and I can manage a good team and I'm gonna go hire a good team. But, you know, that's just kind of the top level. To really get into it, you have to go down to and touch every single, you know, activity at some level or be knowledgeable about every person on your team and what their goals are. So I brought a lot of that, you know, corporate drive where it's, you know, for example, if the company has five goals that they want to meet, those goals should directly flow down to every person on the team. If priority one is to be professional or priority one is to, you know, be profitable this year, then every person on the team, including marketing, sales, accounting, HR, their priority one should be, you know, being profitable. If that's not number one in their goals and objectives, then people will set their own goals and objectives. They will interpret those goals and objectives or their daily tasks differently. And it's easy to start losing focus from that and drifting. And then you have an incohesive team, and that creates a lot of conflict, a lot of, you know, a lot of really hard reviews at the end of the year. So being a good leader and, you know, having a nice place to work, a nice respectful place where you can develop and gain knowledge is important to me, not just, you know, having fun at what I do and being a successful business.
For sure. For sure. And I want to ask, you mentioned respect. So I want to start there. I also want to go more into like employees' day-to-day tactics, but how do you as a leader impart that idea or that notion of respect throughout your organization? Where does it start? How is it perpetuated? How do you think about making sure that everyone is aligned within your organization on what it means to be respectful?
We could probably do 10 podcasts on that subject. you know, there's a lot of scenarios. I think it, of course, it starts with me, right? I set the tone for the company as the leader of the company and the owner of the company. If I don't yell and scream, then people don't feel like they can yell and scream back at me. If something goes wrong and I don't, you know, go running away with my non-hair on fire, again, people realize that they probably shouldn't do that. So it's a good, you know, setting the example by leadership. It's also being professional enough that when they do start to broach that, having the ability to calmly and tactfully and professionally ask them not to, without offending them and telling them that, hey, you know, that might fly, you know, that may be acceptable on someone else's project, but, you know, while you're here, if you wouldn't mind just, you know, not having any foul language, you know, that's just kind of how well we present ourselves. And then conflict, you know, deconfliction of things that come up, even with customers, if they start to get upset, which I've only had one ever, but if they start to get upset, you know, being able to, you know, get through that without yelling and screaming at each other and coming up with a proper solution.
When you have to confront somebody working on a site about their language, for example, do you get pushback? Do you get people saying like, oh, you can't tell me what to do?
Typically not. Have not had anyone do that. I've had to set a few, you know, course reminders here and there that, you know, as soon as I walk away, they might, you know, go back to it. And I can't blame them entirely. You know, that's just kind of what they're used to. They do it every day. No one ever says anything to them. I don't expect them to change, you know, overnight. But if we're building a house next to a residence that's already existing and guys are, you know, cursing back and forth, well, there might be children or, you know, people that don't appreciate
that. Right.
So it's a hard habit to break, but a gentle reminder certainly helps. And then when they don't do it, I certainly applaud them for it and thank them for it on the site.
Understood. And on the flip side, or not on the flip side, just on another area of the business that you mentioned, setting those goals for the business and making sure that everyone is aligned to those so that you're not having those confliction or that alignment there. How do you impart that to the rest of your team? How do you make sure that, hey, this big business goal that we have, that your day-to-day tasks, that you're not only aligned with them, but that you believe that they're important.
Yeah. And again, that could be, you know, again, another couple of podcasts in itself. So I'll try and compress it a bit. Maybe give an example at the end from my corporate days that I feel is a strong example. But, you know, starting with the company and the strategic objective, you know, my wife and I have strategy meetings, you know, once a quarter with just the two of us to figure out what we need to do in the company. And we set those priorities just as we would in the corporate world. And she's a phenomenal soundboard and, you know, course corrects me when I'm getting lost in the woods. So I have to give her a lot of credit. So thank you, Christy, when you see this. So, you know, setting those and then communicating those down. And not just to, you know, when you're a leader or a manager, it's very easy just to kind of give direction to who reports to you or who you see every day, you know, your CFO, your secretary. And then it just, you kind of expect it to go from there. But how many employees do you have out there, Michael?
We're just above 30 now. Yeah.
Okay. I bet if you did a silent poll and asked everyone what their top three priorities were in the company, I would be interested to see the data of how that comes back and how aligned or misaligned they are with the actual corporate goals. You know, it's very insightful. My wife has done that at a few of her companies, and it is bizarre how far they can get from what the actual corporate goals are. So when I was in the corporate world, I was running a team of about 50 people. You know, and the CEO passes down the priorities to me, and so instead of just passing those to my next first line of managers, I went to every person's goals and objectives, and I reviewed them with the managers, and I had the managers talk to the employees about why it was important, not just go sell this product or go do this. We explained to them, this is why it's important. It solves a really big need in the in the industry. It can solve a lot of, you know, technical problems. It's really good for the company in a lot of ways. It's good for your career in a lot of ways. So we really kind of give them the full story, not just marching orders of go take the hill. And as a leader, to make sure you go back and actually check on those goals and make sure that everyone's top three goals are, you know, be profitable, be professional, be respectful, for example. Throughout the year, because most people only get a review once a year, throughout the year, it's nice to go and visit them and ask them what they're working on. And when they say they're working on something that's so off track, it's a nice point to bring it back and say, hey, just don't forget about your goals and objectives that are, you know, setting the company priorities. So, you know, try not to spend too much time over there and kind of get back on track over here. I think it's also important. It helps people focus so they don't get confused on priorities and they don't get shocked when a review comes and you get a bad review because you didn't hit your priorities. But I also believe in, just to pull that a little bit longer, I also believe in pushing employees to be better. So when I was in charge of the 50 people, you know, we had the certain number of corporate goals, 3 to 4, and then each person had professional goals. So I made every person in the 50 person company read how to delegate book. And it communicates how to delegate to people and how to receive delegation and how to be an effective delegator. And I made everybody read it so that when one manager delegated to another or I delegated, it wasn't confrontational. They understood how and why I was doing it because we all read the same book. The impact it had on the team was absolutely amazing. Like, everyone got better at it. Everyone became more efficient. We were all on the same page. I recommend everyone get that book for every employee and go through it. The goal is once everybody reads it, you become this cohesive, like, hey, I need you to do this, and people receive it better. And then I also made every employee have a personal goal, development goal. So not only did they have to read that book, they had to read two books related to something they were interested in. You know, if somebody wanted to get out of our industry and go somewhere else, you know, that was a approved book. Go read that. I had one employee, he was a field service technician, spent most of his career out offshore. And he wanted to go into networking. So I personally went and, you know, talked to him. He asked me about it. I went, got him and his boss together, who worked for me. And I said, look, his new goal is to spend 2 days a week over here working and networking. I don't care what it does over here on field service. He needs to be over here learning this knowledge and, you know, getting a knowledge base. It was amazing. He eventually now runs an entire NOC. He runs the whole thing. He transitioned out of field service. He was so motivated. It made his job a lot better. It also helped our company because we have more depth on the bench. And it also showed other employees that, hey, you can do pretty much, you know, you can transition here and follow, you know, motivate and follow your goals and objectives.
David, where did that drive to want to pour into your employees like that come from? Because that example that you just described, I think is perhaps fearful. A lot of managers are fearful of that exact scenario. I'm training this person who I have doing this job for them to leave, for them to potentially move, and I have to backfill that role, and now I'm creating work for myself. Like, where did that drive to look past that and say, this is good for the human?
Yeah, I think that's a natural human instinct, as you just described. You know, it's fearful and it's territorial. It's, I know more than you do, and therefore I'm more powerful than you. But anyone that's had a boss that's been under, that's treated them like that is just unhappy and miserable. And I don't want anyone to work for me that is unhappy or miserable. If I take that approach, then I am not getting the most out of that employee as well from a business standpoint.
Right.
They're going to become disenchanted. They're going to come, you know, maybe bitter. And those types of things become viral and self-replicating, right? So that person now is bitter because they're under the thumb. And now that transitions to their office mate, who now becomes bitter. And it's like a virus through the company. If you inverse that and you support that and help with that growth, you'd be surprised how fast that virally goes through the company. Mm. You know, when they say, oh, wow, Dave is letting you do I wanted to go into, you know, fiber optics, or I wanted to go into high power. Well, you know, why can't we do that? And 9 times out of 10, it helps the company, not only from their happiness and production, but, you know, now we had more depth on the bench in that scenario. We had, you know, more people that could work different shifts. We had more flex between them. So everyone wins in those types of scenarios. So, you know, the How to Delegate book definitely talks a little bit about that. But it's really just, as a leader, helping your managers and your employees understand that that's an important discussion, is when you see somebody being fearful or protective or territorial, you know, being able to approach that and kind of guide them through that is critical. Otherwise, other people start picking up on it and everyone starts acting the exact same way.
I'm fascinated by that book talks about the receiving of delegation as well. That's not something that you often hear discussed. It's always how to pass these projects off. I'm very interested in the receiving part of that too. And something you touched on earlier when you asked how many folks were here at the receptionist and messaging the business priorities to make sure that everyone can repeat them and is aligned with them. That's something we're working on here. From a value standpoint, everyone can recite our values and the words that make up Fabric: fun, authentic, bold, respectful, innovative, and collaborative. That will roll off, I guarantee you, everyone's tongue. It's the, what are we aiming for this quarter, and how does it build us up to what we need to achieve this year that we need to get better and are working currently right now through the entrepreneurial operating system. I don't know if you've heard of EOS before, but we're working on that to really voice that down throughout the entirety of the business, because if it's difficult at 30, it's going to be really hard at 50, 60, 100 employees.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That gets infinitely harder for management as well. You know, spend a lot of time managing employees and managing personalities and understanding, you know, nonverbal cues and how people react to your presence or your conversation or anything that you're talking about. But having them understand how not only does it help the company, but how it can help them in growing and why that is so important is key. But it has to come from each manager spending time with employees and hearing what they're thinking and actually spending the time, as busy as we all are, to kind of communicate and make sure everyone's on the same page and that everyone understands why we need to be on the same page.
Now, you have, as we begin to wrap things up here, you have discussed that, you know, this is a little bit of a departure from the world of contracting and construction, the way that you're trying to manage and build this company. What effect has that had on your business? How do customers receive you and your employees and your business? What has that done for you?
It's done an amazing amount of, you know, lead closures. Once people come and see us or talk to us on the phone, they immediately recognize that we're not just, you know, your run-of-the-mill contractor kind of just grinding away and, you know, maybe a little more coarse on the edges. They can recognize that it's just a different product that we produce here. You know, we built our showroom, which is, you know, the back of it is behind me, with that intent of when someone walks in, it is clean and professional. It is organized. When I was running that 50-person company, when I first took it over, we had a big warehouse in the back. They called it a, you know, a depot. And I was like, no, this is a technology center. But they had so, there was so much stuff, you know, people's desks, you couldn't see. So I, after the delegation book, I went around and set the goals that we were going to change the entire look of the building and the entire look of every office. And so I delegated and challenged the employees to start throwing things out. I empowered them to throw things out. I empowered them to clean their desks. I motivated them to do it. And I remember one fella, he was a bit of an old timer and I love him to death, but he had a mindset that was hard, you know, hard to change. And his desk was always a mess. And so I was in there one day and he's, you know, kind of upset that I'm asking him if he could clean his desk, because if customers come in, I'd like that to look organized and, like, you know, like we know what we're doing. And he's like, why do I need to do that? And I said, well, Tony, you're a car guy. I said, if you go take your car to a mechanic and you can barely pull it in and he can't find his wrench and his socket that he needs, are you going to leave your car there? Or are you going to take it somewhere where it's pristine, clean, and orderly? And the look that he gave me for like 60 seconds was it was empowering. I just sat there and he was like, all right, I got it.
I love that.
So we got the whole thing cleaned up. We cleaned the entire place. It was truly, we won awards for it as a team because it was such a transformation. And then wow. When customers would come in, they just couldn't believe, the change that was happening, and they felt much more technically comfortable. And just tying that back to the receptionist is why we're here. It's one of the reasons I look for it. When people come into our building, the first thing we ask them to do at the front is sign in on the receptionist iPad that's on a stand. And I can't tell you how many people are like, oh, wow, this is cool, or oh, wait, this is really professional. And it goes back to setting that stage for the customer that we are not just a regular contractor or, you know, provider of cabinetry. But we just bring a different technology and professionalism and different edge to it, if you will.
There you go. I love the little throw in of edge right there.
That's why we came up with the name.
It's you're good so at convenient. This. And I want to point out for the listeners just the thing you kind of subtly touched on, that you changed the name from Depot to Technology Center. And even just in the subconscious mind of saying, oh, well, what would go into a depot versus how I would feel walking into a technology center? That's good stuff there. Good. Tricks of the mind, I will say.
Yeah, it's definitely set the mind stage of everyone. You know, we're not just a storage facility. We're highly technical. We're doing stuff in the world no one else can do. Let's present that and call ourselves, you know, what we're really doing and you know, represent what we're actually doing. So
I love that. Whether you're putting stuff on the ocean floor or whether you're designing kitchens and baths and building stuff, I absolutely love that the lesson is the same there. So kudos to you, Dave. Last question for you here, as I ask of all of our guests, and I have a feeling I know what you're going to say based on the conversation we've had, but our core values here at The Receptionist are fun, authentic, bold, respectful, innovative, and collaborative. Which one resonates with you the most?
Of course, respectful. I think you can be bold. You can do a lot of other things. If you're not respectful in a work environment, again, it becomes very viral and self-replicating, and that can create a lot of bad bad feelings and a lot of hard days at a job. And there's nothing like a bad day at work to make you go look for another job, right? So
absolutely. My goodness. Truer words, sir. Truer words. Dave, thank you so much for this. I appreciate you bringing your wisdom to the show. Many thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you so much for tuning in and watching this episode of The Fabric. If you want more content from our studio here in Denver, Colorado, please consider subscribing to our channel here on YouTube. That's youtube.com/thereceptionistapp to see more of our content coming out of this space that you see behind me, as well as more content from the remarkable guests and the rest of the team here at The Receptionist that we plan to highlight and show you much more of. Join us in the comments. We'd love to start interacting with you there. Please join us, and we'll see you on the next episode.
The Fabric is hosted by me, Michael Ashford, Director of Marketing here at The Receptionist, and it's produced by our creative manager, James Jordan. If you'd like to give The Receptionist for iPad visitor management system a try in your office, jump over to thereceptionist.com/free trial and give us a test drive for 14 days with no credit card required. See what you think. And until next time, take care.